The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1055. It's Monday, the 30th of April, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Neil Ricketts, CEO of Vasarian, VRS, ticker there, and Neil explains the agreement they've signed with Luxus to develop a UK graphene-enhanced polymer supply chain to enable the production in volume of graphene-enhanced plastics. Also on the podcast, Simon Clifton, co-founder and chief technology officer of Satellite Solutions Worldwide, SAT, ticker there, and Simon discusses the acquisition of two companies, OpenSky and Sat Internet Services, plus their £12 million fundraise done at a premium to the share price, plus a brand new company to the podcast, never had them on before, it's Landor Resources. We have Richard Prickett, finance director there, that's LND, and Richard goes over their recent news, including the start of the 2018 drilling program at the BAM East Gold Deposit at Junior Lake Property in Ontario. And as it's a Monday, Oil and Gas Sector Authority Malki talks about the following stocks: Chariot Oil and Gas, Char, take this, C-H-A-R, STX Energy, Jersey Oil and Gas, Echo Energy, Diversified Gas and Oil, and Range Resources. And as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Neil Ricketts, CEO of Vasarian. That's VRS, ticker. Neil, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. Always a pleasure to talk to you, especially on a Monday morning.
Yeah, it's almost, you know, you're a weekly guest, nearly.
You know? we try not to do every Monday, but we've obviously had a very, very active time recently, and yeah, there's a lot of news gone out in the last sort of 6 months, so it's been busy.
Well, there's an agreement today with Luxus, and we'll get into that in a bit. Before we do it, Neil, as always, there are people new to investing, new to the podcast, and may not have heard of the company, so can you explain what is Vasarian all about, please?
Yeah, so Vasarian formed in 2011 to exploit a lot of the good work going on in academia, in the UK universities. But our job is really to take those clever ideas and turn them into products. And that's what we've been doing with our global customers.
Excellent stuff. Okay, so you've done an agreement with Luxus to develop a UK graphene enhanced polymer supply chain to enable the production in volume of graphene enhanced plastics. Take us into this. What does it mean? What's the significance of this, Neil?
Well, this is there's two parts to this. The first part is that it's a great agreement with Luxus. They're in the right place. They're doing a lot of work with recycling of plastics. They're doing a lot of work with coming up with new forms of plastics. They do the sort of next stage to what we do in terms of taking a material and mixing it into other materials. But this is a collaboration. This is a partnership. And the other part of the partnership is that this is a brand new science. And so we brought in the Warwick Manufacturing Group, who supply a lot of the academic knowledge and a lot of the fundamental chemistry that's required to make this a real success. And this isn't about just making a little bit of product. This is about supply, you know, coming up with a supply chain that can meet the demand of graphene in the future. And that is big, big news. And, you know, for us, it means that we can now start thinking with our partners that we've got about supplying some of these big collaborations that we've been talking about.
Oh, okay, so that feeds into that. So it's huge, because at the moment we know what are the people say what are the limitations of graphene, and it is pretty much one of the limitations at the moment is the amount of quantity producing quality, isn't it?
Yeah. So when we bought the business in 2014, we could make about half a gram a week, and you know, we've scaled that up by, you know, factor of 1,000, and we're continuing to scale it up, and we'll meet the demand with the capacity that's required. There isn't a fundamental problem in our process in terms of getting bigger. So, you know, bigger just means bigger machines and more people and so on. So for us, it's about developing that supply chain that can meet the demand in this much bigger volume. You know, building a successful business, you know, you need a very, very good idea, which is what we've got. But you then need to be able to supply the market, and that's what we're able to do with these collaborations and partnerships.
Now, you're quite active on Twitter, and I see you're very tolerant as to the many requests and questions of some shareholders, some not shareholders. So what is the burning question many of them are asking at you, Neil?
Well, we try to remain open to our shareholders. We always set out with the aim to be a slightly different company to those that may have historically been on AIM. We wanted to be transparent. We wanted to be front and center. We wanted the shareholders to know who they were dealing with. That's why we do our shareholder days and things like that. But the burning question is, you know, when? And it's very difficult as the CEO with so much going on to know exactly and to double guess what all these big corporations are doing. And you know, some things are outside of our control. So when everybody's enjoying their May bank holiday, my team will be hard at it in one of the production centers, because that's the only time when we can get time to run production trials. And you know, we are bound by constraints that probably not everybody's aware of. So access to plant and equipment in customer timelines, all of these things play. But what we do is every time we get one of these collaborations or one of these partnerships, we totally de-risk the business. So we're not reliant on one product in one sector. We've got multiple sectors, multiple products. That means as the biggest shareholder, I'm in a really relaxed position, because to have one of these partnerships or one of these collaborations, I'd be really, really happy. But to have multiple ones, it means that, you know, we don't have to be beholden to just one application. Yeah. And you know, that's a big thing. That was another one of the criteria of starting this business right at the beginning, is that it had to be relatively low investment risk.
Yeah, yeah. And as far as, like you say, you've done many a collaboration here over the last 6 to 12 months, and you know, and one of them sticks out in my mind is that Chinese collaboration. And is things all going as according to plan there?
Well, actually, I'm into London this afternoon for a meeting with the Chinese Business Council. It's all still in play. I mean, I wouldn't say that it's the easiest thing in the world to try and get two governments to negotiate and try and get a good deal for the business. I think, you know, there are competitive strategies within China at the moment about not wanting foreign technology or not wanting foreign investment. And you know, I wouldn't say that it's terribly easy, and but there's you know, we're working hard at it, and you know, no doubt we'll see what happens in the coming months or coming weeks. And yeah. hard work, that one, to be honest, Justin, but you know, obviously extremely well worth it.
Yeah,
that's
definitely.
Not to say that that's the only thing that's going on at the moment, and we have multiple locations going on, and that can be a challenge as well. So we're only a very relatively small team still.
Yeah. I mean, that is one of the problems. I mean, the growing pains, isn't it? So, and you know, and no company sort of knows how to deal with this until they have that, you know, go through that experience, I suppose. But and so that puts a strain on the business.
Well, there is no right answer.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. There is no right answer to that fast growth. And if you, I mean, I've read lots of books on it, and I've listened to a lot of people on it, and it's just really hard, because when you've got too many people, you're using too much cash, and you know, there's a lead time required, people up, and you haven't got enough people, then you know, you wish you had more, and there's not enough hours in a day, and you're pushing the team really, really hard, and you know, sometimes there's casualties as a result of that. So it's really, really tricky, to be honest, and this high growth phase is really difficult to manage and make sure that everybody continues to be motivated. But we've got a good team around us, and we've also got lots and lots of really, really good opportunities.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to ask you, obviously you're inside the industry, but I mean, do you think graphene will live up to, you know, the hype that's surrounded it, and do you think it will transform many sectors?
I think actually we're underplaying it at the moment. I think there was a huge amount of hype when it was first discovered, and you know, we first got to know about what it could do, and then it kind of, people became a bit jaded about it, and you know, it was a bit like the Wild West for a while. But actually now we're starting to see some of the test results and some of the applications. I think we've only just started, to be honest. And you know, there's an awful lot of external pressures as well. You know, we were just talking about plastic recycling. You know, you need viable products that can replace stuff if you're going to get rid of it. And you know, I think there's huge amounts of opportunity that these new materials can offer to traditional industries.
Yeah, marvelous stuff. Okay, Neil, last thing. If someone's listening, likes the sound of this, And, you know, they've heard you a couple of times on the podcast but are not following the story as yet. But you keep churning out these deals, and the more you do it, the more they like the sound of you. Give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
So I think the first is our collaborations and our partnerships and our connections and contacts puts us in an unprecedented position. We gain a lot of support from a lot of really, really interested parties, including central government and Innovate and so on. I think the second aspect is that we've now proven ourselves in terms of collaborations, and we've obviously had a huge amount of news flow over the last 6 months. And the third thing is that I'm the largest shareholder, so all of my agenda and strategies are all aligned with the shareholders.
Marvellous stuff, Neil. Good to chat to you. And no doubt, maybe next Monday, who knows, we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks, fella.
No pressure. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Simon Clifton, co-founder and chief technology officer of Satellite Solutions Worldwide, SAT ticker. Simon, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin.
Yeah, some big news, and you're carrying on that acquisition trail, which is phenomenal. So what number are you up to at the moment, Simon?
So basically, this is acquisition number 19 and number 20. So we're now at 120,000 customers, of which just over 20,000 we've bought in this fundraise. So that means we're now live in 30 countries. So we've done 20 acquisitions in 7 countries in 3 years.
Wow. Well, we'll go into the details of these two in a bit. Before we do, for people not aware of Satellite Solutions Worldwide, give a brief summary as to the business, if you could, Simon.
Yeah, so the business was founded by me and Andrew back in 2008. We listed the business on AIM in May 2015, which is nearly 3 years ago, which seems amazing now. We have 120,000 customers in 30 countries, and our basic modus operandi is we deliver super fast broadband for customers who sit outside the fiber footprint. So effectively, if you can't get good broadband over wires or fiber, we'll deliver it via alternative technologies like fixed wireless or satellite.
Yeah, and this segment that you delivered to, is that, I mean, some people would maybe say, is that an increasing or decreasing segment? What's the score there?
I think a lot of people, when we first entered the business, were concerned about fiber rollout, the word sort of ingress on our customer base. But we found, in fact, that as our technologies have got faster and better, we can deliver more for the customer. We're pushing back against things like ADSL, poor broadband speeds. People need at least 4 to 5 megabits these days to be able to take advantage of things like video on demand and streaming. Mm-hmm. And our products have got exponentially faster and better over time. So, our market share is actually increasing, if anything.
Yeah, okay. So take us to through the proposed acquisitions of Open Sky and Sat Internet Services, please, if you could.
Yeah, so anybody who's following us, who's looked at our European map, will see sort of glaring holes, really, in these two large economies, Germany and Italy. The business that is focused in Germany has also got a business in Portugal. So we're effectively picking up 2 companies, but 3 countries. These are all exciting markets. Certainly Germany, powerhouse, obviously, economy of Europe, with something like 3.9 million customers under 4 meg. Italy, obviously, particularly of the south, very rural, 3.6 million Italian customers below 4 meg. So these are areas that we really, really wanted to be, have a hub and operate our business, but we've been waiting to find the right company and the right business to buy to sort of spearhead our launch in these countries. And we're now effectively coming here with the Viasat joint venture, which gives us a fantastic proposition and the marketing support to really push into these markets.
Yeah, and you, like you say, you've done this 19 and 20 now, and these acquisitions, I mean, do you know of the companies well before you do? Obviously, when you're putting your target sites on these companies, you do due diligence, but beforehand, did you know of them and are aware of their markets and everything?
Yeah, so all the businesses we've bought, we were well aware of before we bought them. In fact, none of them were for sale. So, all 20 acquisitions, none of these businesses were for sale. We approached the sellers because of the fact that we thought they were a good strategic fit with our business, or took us into new markets. These two businesses, we've known the owners for many, many years. They were both of these guys were around at the very beginning of satellite broadband with us almost 10 years ago. And we've watched them and grown. It's obviously quite a niche sector, and we've followed their progress over that period. And indeed, we've been in acquisition talks with them for quite a considerable time. And so the businesses, in terms of the DD and understanding the finance, the customers, everything else, we've had, you know, over a year of working with them. So we're very comfortable that these are a very good fit. They're very well-run businesses. They're going to be cash generative and accretive for us from the beginning. So all a good fit.
Yeah, and I suppose that, you know, knowing the company and doing your homework beforehand and approaching the company is a lot better than waiting for them to come up for sale and getting involved in a bidding war, isn't it?
Indeed. And, you know, and obviously there are, you know, we've obviously consolidated a considerable number of the satellite broadband ISPs in Europe now. And we obviously, as it's a niche, we do know where the ones we want are. Similarly, the ones that we don't want. And as I said, you know, these guys have been around from the beginning and they've got good quality, well-run businesses that we think fit very well with us and our European expansion plans. And in fact, these two mark the end, really, of our satellite broadband roll-up in Europe. There will be some, maybe some small bolt-ons in some countries, but these are the major hubs now that we've got live and active as a result of these two acquisitions.
Yeah, and you're paying for this how then, Simon?
Paying for the businesses via fundraise. So the total cash consideration is £8 million. There is also part of the fundraiser, £1.5 million working cap facility, plus another £1.5 million for bolt-ons, which we did last year. Give us a bit of a war chest to go out and pick up some other small companies. And there's also £1 million of deal fees. So we've raised £12 million at this fundraise at a premium to the share price, which is obviously great for everybody.
Yeah, listen, I talk to a lot of AIM companies, and it's always cheered by investors and almost held up, you know, saying this is the way to do it. And yeah, it's very, very rare on AIM do you see companies raising at a premium. So it's always nice to see that.
I think it's because really, you know, our business is very consistent. We've delivered for several years everything we've said. Obviously, because of the nature of our business, a lot of the revenue that comes in is recurring. So over 90% of our revenue is recurring. Mm-hmm. And I think shareholders understand, you know, that it's a very solid business in that respect.
Yeah, absolutely. Excellent. Well, Simon, if someone is listening to this and likes the sound of what you're doing, but are not following the story yet, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button, add you to their watch list, please.
Sure. I think a key thing is that we continue to grow organically every year. So whilst we have the acquisitions, organic growth is really what it's all about, and we continue to deliver on that every year the business has been in existence. The demand for broadband and data consumption continues to grow exponentially, and our products are growing to cope with that. So we've now launched 50 megabit satellite products in some countries across Europe, unlimited data allowances, which just shows how satellites come on in that 10 years we've been here. And I think another key thing is that our joint venture with Viasat means, you know, we're getting very significant marketing investment from them in these countries like Germany and Italy and Portugal, which means that we can get our message out to these people who are not served by fiber, deliver free hardware and installation on the technology, plus a great alternative broadband product.
Excellent stuff. Simon, good to chat to you, and always keeping busy, so no doubt we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Indeed. Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Richard Prickett, Finance Director at Landor Resources. That's LND ticker. Richard, thanks for joining me.
Morning, Justin. Thanks very much for having me on.
Always good to have a new company on, and I'm not fully aware of what you're doing, so what you're doing at the moment, so, and I'm sure people listening aren't, so for people out there and for myself, Richard, can you summarise what Landor Resources is all about, please?
Absolutely. Landor is an AIM-listed company registered in Guernsey, but with all of our operations in Canada, in eastern Canada, and in the province of Ontario. We have our main focus is on the Junior Lake project, which is primarily a gold project that we're drilling at the moment, together with a nickel sulfide copper deposit adjacent.
I see. Excellent stuff. And so you said so you've got gold there, and you've got nickel copper, which is, you know, very hot commodities at the moment. So take us through. I know you've recently raised some money, haven't you?
Yeah, we recently engaged Sencos, and we've raised just over £3 million, £3.15 million, which is nearly $6 million Canadian, which is what we're really thinking, because that's where our expenditure is. And we are going to be utilizing those funds to continue drilling on the BAM East gold deposit, We already have an existing compliant resource of 400,000 ounces of gold. It's all near surface in an open pit frame. And we will be drilling out between the two deposits over the next few months to expand our targeted expansion is to take that up to approximately 1 million ounces of gold.
Excellent stuff. And timeline-wise, you know, where do you see yourself in the next sort of 6 months to a year then, Richard?
Well, right now we've just embarked upon the drilling. We announced that the other day, and so we put our first hole in. We expect to be drilling for the next 3 to 4 months. We should have by September, October, a new resource report out, giving all the details of the drilling and adding to the existing resource report we've just announced. I mean, that we have a full 43-101 report on the website, and at the same time we'll be embarking on a preliminary economic assessment of the two deposits, the gold deposit and the adjacent nickel sulfide copper cobalt palladium deposit, and we would expect to have results out for that in the third, fourth quarter of this year.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, Canada there is quite a friendly jurisdiction, is it?
It's a really good jurisdiction. It's a very professional jurisdiction. They've got a very long-established mining code, and we're in a very good area where it's very accessible. We have our technical base in Thunder Bay. We can drive to the site in 4 to 5 hours, and it's accessible all year round. And we have an extremely good relationship with the local First Nations, and who help us a lot on site. So it's and politically, it's very, very sound.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. And as far as yourself is concerned, and the CEO there, what's your background, Richard?
Well, our background, we've been, Bill Humphreys and I have been working together as sort of business partners for 20 years. We started off with a company called Brancoat Holdings, where we developed nearly 4 million ounces of gold in Argentina, which was sold on at a very attractive price to an American-Canadian company, and shareholders made an extremely good return on that. And then after that, we developed up nearly 2 million ounces of gold at Patagonia Gold. So we have got very good track record and experience in developing projects like this.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, sounding good. So that's probably one of the reasons why someone should follow you. But for people listening right now, Richard, and they like the sound of this, and they're not yet following you, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, number one, we've just completed a financing, and the share price is exactly the same as the funding price. So I think you've got a low entry point coming into this. And exploration companies are not only just about the management and the technical expertise, but it's about the money. And we've got the money to carry on and do the program that we've put out there to use the money for. So that's number one. Number two, I've touched on the track record of Bill Humphreys and myself. We believe we've got a very good track record in this area, and we know how to build ounces up, and we also know how to get value for shareholders, well, either on selling it or having a joint venture. And thirdly, if you want exposure to some very attractive commodities, which I believe we're in a very good timeline on, you've got gold, nickel, copper, cobalt, and palladium, all exposure to those in these projects, and I think that's a very attractive ingredient.
Yeah, absolutely. Richard, good to chat to you, and like you say, you've got a busy period ahead, so hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Oil and Gas Sector Authority, Malky. You all right, fella?
Yeah, I'm very well, Justin. You?
Not too bad. I've got the heater on the office, which shouldn't happen at the end of last day of April. Come on, we should. it should be heater free, really. But apart from that, I'm fine. So let's start off. Who are we starting off today, Malky?
Well, I thought we'd get the bad news out of the way to begin with, because there's been an announcement this morning that Chariot Oil and Gas, which is quite a popular one with the retail, have announced that the really big deep well, which was their game with ENI, turned out to be dry.
Oh, right.
this is another bit of bad news for offshore Morocco, where it's continued to be a bit disappointing. There was a slightly mixed view, but you know, there's no doubt about it being a duster because limited hydrocarbon shows, I think, is what they said. They did encounter the tight carbonates in the Jurassic target they were looking for, but and it had a seal on top, thick seal on top. But you know, when they start going on about sort of be useful for the data accumulation and so on. You know that I'm afraid that it's not that good news.
It's good to hear you say this, because when people first start investing, and especially when they're looking at sort of resource stocks, oil and gas as well, there's a lot of technical terms in there. It's not plain English, is it? And you know, and I've known for a while. You see certain titles on RNSs, and you know full well, like strategic review is never a good thing. People, they try and put a good spin on it, but that kind of thing, strategic review, means it isn't going well. Otherwise, why would they have a review if everything's going wrong? But like you just said there, what you mentioned a couple of terms there that things to look out for is not good, you know. And exactly, it's always good.
It's you know, this is a high risk wildcat exploration well offshore. They were funded for it, so you know, it's not the end of the world. And they've got another big, I mean, Chariot is a, you know, everyone knows that Chariot is a company that goes out trying to find the really big the big plays, so you're going to get some dusters in there in with it. And they've got a really exciting well to drill in Namibia later this year, and it's quite possible they'll have another look at this one in Morocco. But when I looked at the price last time, it was something like 30-something% down, which is not surprising under the circumstances. You know, it's a big, you know, a big well, and it's come in dry.
And you know, people have to understand as well, like I said, I see a lot of people, and especially you get people talking up these big wildcat things as a chance to make a lot of money, but they have to understand there's a high risk as well. It's like, you know, 1 in 5, 1 in 4 chance, isn't it, they're coming in. So
I reckon that, you know, a rank wildcat should be between, you know, 12 and 25%, no more. And that's what you get. And this is why we try and sort of filter things through a bit if we can, by saying that, you know, when you've had a big discovery and you've got the oil, then your risk is lowered. People like, you know, Hurricane or Jersey or whatever. And the next stock I'm going to talk about is a different sort of type of play as well, with the SDX. So, you know, that you've got to look at the risk in very much within those parameters.
Yeah. Okay. SDX, go for it. Because I mean, Paul's on again soon. Because they're doing very well, aren't they?
I'm not surprised. I mean, yeah. Every time I still pick up my pen to write about this company, it's been another discovery.
Yeah.
And so last week, just after we'd spoken on Monday, I think it was on Tuesday, they announced another discovery. This time, it was a heavy oil discovery at their Rabul IV concession in the Western Garib in Egypt, onshore Egypt. But, you know, great reservoir sands, good porosity, 43 foot of pay, you know, and I mean, the thing about this is that it's incredibly efficient and high margin, because, you know, they'll tie this into the very nearby Mesida complex, like they will for one or two of the other wells that have come in as well. As I said, it's enormously efficient. It adds to their existing discoveries at very low costs, and so yet again they've come in with this time in Egypt, and this time with oil. But you know, what you've been discussing with Paul has previously been gas and Morocco onshore. Mm-hmm. But they're doing incredibly well. Last week as well, I mean, I wasn't going to mention it, but they did announce that they'd spudded their ninth well in their project, in the 9-well program in Morocco. So, and that's an exploration well. You know, you talk about things coming in that you know, they've had 6 or 7 discoveries so far. This one is also a fairly rank exploration well, but if it comes in, it'll fit into the jigsaw in Morocco perfectly. So, Yeah, you know, Paul Welsh is doing all the right things at SDX. It's a, you know, in Morocco, it's very high margin because their government there are putting the price of gas up. And in Egypt, they're continuing to make discoveries. So all going well with SDX, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm off the top of my head, I think they're running about equivalent of 3,500 barrels at the moment a day. They're aiming for 8,000 by the end of the year, which, of course, is more than double. And their margins are massive. I think it's around about sub $8 a barrel, I think, equivalent, you know? So
In Morocco, it's ridiculous because, I mean, the gas price there is $10. The government is trying to put it up to $12. I reckon that in Morocco, their finding costs are less than $1 about an MCF.
Wow. Cool. What's next, Malky?
Well, I thought I'd mention Jersey Oil and Gas. You know, I've talked about it once or twice in the last few weeks because they've done all the right things. They've had the discovery at Verbier with their Statoil last summer, and now that they've gone ahead on the appraisal program, so much bigger chance of success. And indeed, this appraisal of Verbier, and possibly a sidetrack, will be to hopefully tighten up and narrow the sort of fairly widespread of numbers that they've got there. One of the reasons I think there's a fair bit of upside in addition to that in Jersey Oil and Gas is that there are a number of other potential prospects on the site. Obviously, we've talked about Cortina and various other things, but in fact, there are potentially other things on the go as well. Now, last week they announced that Statoil and all the co-venturers in this license have pre-funded a very substantial 3D seismic survey and over the whole of the Verbier license and the nearby acreage. And this is really exciting because effectively what they're doing, I think there are quite a lot of other things on the go here, not just the ones that we've mentioned like Cortina and so and Meribel, but you know, this is very exciting news because you know, Statoil think it's worth having a look, then there may well be significantly more things in that license. So watch out for that. I mean, they've got £25.5 million pounds of cash in the balance sheet. Their capex for this year is going to be in the sort of high end of the 9 to 11 range. So they've got plenty of money and very exciting prospects, I think, from Jersey.
J O G, marvellous stuff. Anything else, Malky?
Yeah, just briefly mention Echo Energy have updated this morning on their position in Argentina. They started with Fracción D, that's the gas one, potentially commercial gas project here with their first look at it. It only needs to be 7 to 10 BCF for a commercial discovery there. CPR had 8.6 low end up to 80 odd BCF. So if that has come in and it works well, it's a decent discovery to start with for Echo. And they've got the deeper Toby Ferrer gas target to go for as well, which could easily be another discovery later on this one. So the initial goes at the gas in Argentina, it looks like it's gone pretty well. Mm-hmm. And I'm quite excited about that. And they've announced this morning that they're moving the kit for the four-well exploration program at Fracción C, and that's expected to be on site in early May. So we'll expect to see something before too long in terms of a spud date for that. And they've got a whole load of tenders in for a really substantial seismic program, which they're starting in the second half of this year across the whole a huge amount of their acreage there. So all looking pretty good on Echo Energy.
Marvellous stuff, Malky. And is that it? All done, Dustin?
Two quick ones. I mentioned DGO, Diversified Gas and Oil, because I noticed that quite a lot of punters here are getting on the case in this one. This is a US producer, quite a very substantial one. I mean, it's made a load of acquisitions. It's now producing 28,000 barrels a day. This is it's interesting in the sense that this just the sort of thing that they do is basically get late life assets to just by producing small wells here and there all across the in the States, and they bought one or two quite substantial acquisitions, but they pay a dividend as well. And they just announced a decent rise in the dividend this morning. I'm going to see them tomorrow because they're over in town this week with the results. There are one or two people taking a look at DGO, and I think it may be worth a look.
Yeah, exactly. It's for people who want to get a bit of exposure to oil and gas, I suppose, but have a company that's not massive, but have a decent revenue stream, like, and paying dividend, that kind of thing. Because I know a couple people interested in this who wouldn't normally be interested in, say, exploration plays, you know?
That's exactly right. So I thought I'd sort of call it out because it's quite an interesting one, and I might speak about it again next week if I'm going to see the CEO tomorrow because he's in town, so I'm seeing him tomorrow.
Yeah, cool. And anything else?
Just briefly, I know that there are quite a lot of retail in Range Resources. This is from way back when they were a glamour stock. They put it all back together again now. It's taken a long time, but they are working very hard to ensure that their production is picking up again. They've got Beach Marcel, which is the big water flood plant, which is picking up. They announced last week further increases in production, and they're even into positive cash flow terms now. So if the people who have been into Range for a long time, it's taking a long time to get back into the sort of positive territory, but it's looking okay at the moment. So that looks good, and increasing from a very low base, Justin.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. RRL is the ticker there. Malky, thanks very much for that, fella, and we'll speak next week.
Bank holiday, I think it is. We may have to rearrange.
Maybe squeeze it to a Tuesday if we can, or if you're around, and we'll do that. Excellent stuff. Cheers, Malky.
Thank you. Bye now.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are as follows. EVR Holdings, EVRH, hitting all-time highs today, of course, in the VR space. At four, Feedback, FDBK. In fact, I own those two companies there. At three, Sainsbury's, SBRY. Of course, there's a massive merger there going on, apparently, with Asda. I didn't actually read the news on that, but I didn't see the share price. Are they down on that? But there's some kind of £10 billion merger going on that maybe... they're up 17% today. Okay, that's Sainsbury's. At two, Chariot Oil and Gas, who Malky talked about earlier, a big drill. They found no hydrocarbons, so a bit of a duster there, CHAR. And at one, I wrote a blog about them on the weekend, United Oil and Gas. And do you know what? It's quite telling, actually, that Chariot Oil and Gas at number two and United Oil and Gas at one, because Chariot Oil and Gas were very much into the high impact, one or two drills, that's all they had. But United Oil and Gas are more diversified, and they've got these potentially transformational, super wildcat high impact drills going on. They have that, yes, but they also have less risky plays going on, and what they hope to do is create the model, a bit like Upland Resources, of having cash generative low risk assets underpinning these high risk, sort of exploration plays that really could transform the company. And this is an ex-Tullow team. And I don't know if you know about Tullow, but a hugely successful company that went from a small oil and gas company to a FTSE 100 player. And these are from that company. And I think they have the same kind of DNA in them, and they want to sort of replicate that kind of success. Worth looking into, worth reading about. United Oil and Gas, UOG. All right, time for the top five most liked RNSs. I try and say it like that, RNSs, because a friend of mine who's a new investor said, what's an RNS? And when he listened to the podcast, it's a regulatory news service announcement. Okay, At 5, it's Aethid Energy, Quarterly Report, and Appendix 5B. At 4, Berkeley Energia, Quarterly Report, March 2018. At 3, Vesarian, Agreement with Lexus, chat to Neil about that in the podcast. At 2, Hummingbird Resources, Q1 2018 production results and operational update. And number 1, most liked RNS, was an operational update from Echo Energy. Surprised by that, actually, that they got the top spot there. Anyway, that's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz. Discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.